This ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugen Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugen Roshi is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone. So this morning we are doing a Jikai ceremony. Jikai means to receive the precepts. And in our tradition, these are the Bodhisattva precepts, the precepts that Dogen brought from China and began to transmit. And these are the moral teachings of the Buddha, which go back to the Buddha, although the presentation of these specific precepts are similar and a little different. But their basis is our own essential moral core. The Buddha said we live in a moral universe as human beings. We live moral lives in the sense that our lives have influence and impact. And those influences and impacts can be either destructive and diminishing, or they can be very fruitful, affirming, bringing forth all that is good. And we see within our humanness our capacity to work at both sides of the spectrum, to bring forth great pain and suffering and confusion, not just for ourselves, but for others, on small and large platforms. But we also see our capacity to do much good and to bring all that is good into this world and to be a benefit in the world. From a Buddhist perspective, that is the point. That is the purpose of a human life. And it is the way that we fulfill our human lives. And so the Bodhisattva in our tradition is that being who recognizes that at a very deep level and dedicates their life and everything in it, both to their own well-being, because each of us is a part of it. When we vow to alleviate the suffering of all beings, we include ourselves. But that we don't limit it to ourselves or just to the ones we love or care about or identify with. That we extend it to everyone and to everything. And so in that way, that aspiration is about as large as it can be because it is all-inclusive. And it is to meet and encounter and pass through or liberate anything that would obstruct that, anything that would limit it, anything that would suggest that there is another better way. And so these precepts are Buddhism's teachings about the things that we need to pay particular attention to, the things within ourselves, the impulses, the attachments that are based on fundamental views of what we think we are as individuals, what we think everything else is, and the way we think the world works, and how we're going to find our own contentment and fulfillment. And so they point to the ways in which we create karma that is binding and is contrary to what we actually want, which is to live peaceful, joyful, loving, compassionate lives. But they also help us to recognize those tendencies and then to transform them. And so the precepts have two aspects, as you'll see if you're unfamiliar with these, in terms of both those impulses, the thoughts, the words, and the actions that we need to be very aware of and free ourselves of and transform into more constructive, positive, compassionate thoughts, words, and actions. And they're based in selflessness. They're based in the fundamental realization that there is no inherent self in ourselves, others, or anything. And so these precepts themselves, although extremely important, essential, according to the Buddha. We cannot practice without them. We cannot meditate without them. We cannot free ourselves without them. And yet, or rather, and at the same time, to be ever aware that they have no intrinsic quality or essence. Otherwise, we could very easily attach to them as an absolute truth and become self-righteous and dogmatic. So in that way, they're not a list of rules, although they can sound like that. And they're not bound by time and space, although they have to function in our particular time and space. Otherwise, they're not helpful. And they are of the nature of emptiness because Buddha has no fixed form. Compassion has no fixed form. So that means we have to actually be alert and responsive in each moment. But not being fixed, at the same time, they're not ambiguous. They're not relativistic. They're not ambivalent. Life is sometimes complicated, and sometimes we're not clear about how to move forward. But the precepts themselves are never obscure. And so today, these four students who have been training for a number of years and have been practicing for quite a while with these precepts, and we've been meeting and having discussions and teachings, and so they're going to be formally taking vows, which is important because when we take a vow, as Dogen says, we're aligning ourselves in a very deep way with how we want to live our life. And in making that a declaration in front of all of you as witnesses, that becomes very, very real. And so that now is really great motivation, important motivation to really actually do that. Right? We see too many examples of words that say one thing and actions that say with another, and we have become, are sort of being taught to be accepting of that. That's the way the world works. And so taking vows is to be very clear about how one wants to live their life, these four students, and in front of all of you are going to make a commitment to that, and that vow then holds us, and we keep returning to it, and returning to it, and returning to it. So we'll begin with the four students doing a series of bows, first to the Buddha on the altar, and that altar will then be closed, and a new altar is established here. And so in the sense of that, the spirit of that is that these precepts are being transmitted by the Buddha, coming down to us through all these generations. And then they will go to do three bows to their parents. So if their parents are here, they will do the bows directly to them. If their parents are not here, they will go into the Buddha hall and bow in the direction of where their parents are either buried, if they're deceased, or living. And so the first set of bows is a sort of recognition of our original teacher and the beginning of the Buddhist tradition and how we have come to be here and these teachings that we practice. And these lives that we endeavor to live and, in a sense, walk in the footsteps of the Buddha, which are our own footsteps. The second series of bows is to express gratitude and the recognition that we are all here only because of the gift of life through our parents. And so we honor that and give our parents what they've been waiting for a very long time. And so clearly these vows are a way of recognizing all that we are indebted to, all those we are indebted to for our lives. And this last series of vows is to the teacher, the precepts teacher, which today is myself. You can sit down. So this is a way of expressing one of the Buddha's most profound teachings, which is dependent arising, that we are all in a profound, intricate, and wonderfully inescapable web of mutual dependency. No one arrives on their own. No one accomplishes anything on their own. And yet, Buddhist practice and these vows are something that we each need to live and take full responsibility for within ourselves. So next we'll do the invocation of the three treasures, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. The Buddha, our historical teacher, Shakyamuni, but also all enlightened masters, and really all enlightened beings, however they come to their enlightenment. The Dharma, which is the teachings of the Buddha, those teachings that illuminate reality, the self, what is true, what is reliable, what we can practice. And the Sangha, which is the community of practitioners. All beings have Buddha nature, therefore a Sangha can also extend to include everyone, and in that sense, everything. And so the three treasures in this way are very intimate. Ultimately, they're realized as one's own body and mind, and they also include all of reality. So, Choki. And I'll do this twice in Japanese, honoring our lineage, and once in English. Everyone, please go show. Namo Jipo Butsu Namo Jipo Ho Namo Jipo So Namo Hanshi Shakyamuni Butsu Namo Dai Zidai Hi Kyu Ku Kanzeyon Bo Sa Namo Dajin Fugin Bo Sa Namo Daishin Manjushri Bo Sa Namo Koso Joyo Daishi Namo Taiso Josa Daishi Namo Riki Daiso Shi Bo Sa. So be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions, be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions, be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions, be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha, be one with the great compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, be one with the great wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva, be one with the great wise Manjushri Bodhisattva, be one with Koso Joyodaishi, be one with Taiso Josai Daishi, be one with the successive great ancestors. Namo Jipo Butsu Namo Jipo Ho Namo Jipo So Namo Hanshi Shakyamuni Butsu Namo Dai Zidai Hi Kyu Ku Kanzeyon Bo Sa Namo Dajin Fugin Bo Sa Namo Daishin Manjushri Bo Sa Namo Koso Joya Daishi Namo Taiso Josa Daishi Namo Riki Daiso Shibo Satsu. Next is the Gatha of Atonement, and we begin many of our ceremonies this way. We talked quite a bit about this. Gatha of Atonement is something that really begins with the beginning of the Buddhist Sangha. If we are going to be on this path, we have to sort of take stock, account for, take responsibility for, and transform those actions in our past that we carry as burdens, those things we have done that we regret, that we wish we hadn't, but we did, so that we can alleviate ourselves of that burden and transform that into energy of and resolve and commitment about today. At the same time that as we are on this path and we continue at times to fall into old habits, old patterns, to react in ways that are not skillful and create new negative karma, that we have a way of taking responsibility for that. Again, turning that into both study and examination, resolve and commitment, so we're constantly not accumulating, but in a way that is honest and genuine and frees us, right? And it also changes our mind. And so the Gatha of Atonement in this way is very important. It's an ongoing practice for all of us. And so we'll do this all together. And it reminds, it makes it clear that karma, evil karma, doesn't just exist in the world. It's a result of things that we do. The Buddha said there are thoughts, words, and actions based in intention. So we have a desire for something. And that comes into our thoughts. We speak it, we act on it, and that has consequence. And it's the negative aspects of that that bind us and cause harm for other people. You're taking the bodhisattva vows, which is to don't do that, right? And when we do, right, because these are training precepts, thank you, then we have a way to turn towards that, take responsibility, and turn it into something positive. This arises because of impulses, deep impulses, greed, anger, delusion, pride, and jealousy, these afflictive emotions that are very powerful, that we're learning how to recognize, to meet skillfully and compassionately when they arise, to transform, to calm, and that they arise and are enacted through what we think, what we say, and what we do, the ways in which we create worlds. And atonement is to take responsibility and to empower ourselves and to shift. So we'll do this as a call and response, so everyone's invited to engage it, to Gautam Atonement. Shoki. Please, Gosho. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. Of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. To my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old. My beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Born of my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
Next is Shasui, which is using water from the stomach of the mountain and a simple pine branch to express the unity, the one essence of Buddha mind that we each practice, that makes it possible for us to practice, and that is being conveyed and transmitted through every moment of sincere practice. And now we'll take refuge in the three treasures. So invoking the three treasures is to invoke is to bring forth, to bring into the presence of this space, this taking a vow ceremony in our minds, in our consciousness, to make it real. Taking refuge is an essential part, sort of a foundational practice within Buddhism. It is the way the Buddha originally ordained his monastics to take refuge in the Dharma and Sangha, as Dogen says, is to unreservedly rely, to have trust, that much trust, because they are nothing other than your Buddha mind, than your basic nature, than the basic nature of all things. What would we not trust? And so to take refuge is to rely upon in every way, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and to spend our lives developing, understanding, clarifying the three treasures. In the beginning, they're words. They can come to us as ideas, concepts, very small. But ultimately, they're to be realized as spacious, vast, boundless, and very personal. So again, we'll do this twice in Japanese and once in English. When we do it in English, everyone's invited to take refuge. And we do this in call and response. Okay, Shoki. Everyone, please, Gassho. Namu kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukkyo kiye hokyo kiye so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity. I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha. Kiye butsu namu kiye ho namu kiye so kiye butsu mujo san kiye ho riji san kiye so wago san kiye bukkyo kiye hokkyo kiye so kyo. Will you maintain this?
I vow to maintain
this. Okay, three, take a bow, two a bow. A bow, one bow. So next is the pure precepts. The pure precepts are, describe a way of being in the world that is in accord with our basic nature. When we have the right conditions, the right guidance, and we apply ourselves, this is the way we find ourselves to be. And in that way, in the broadest way possible, they bring our attention to some fundamental truths about what it is to be a human being and how we can be a human being. Okay. So the first of the pure precepts is to not create evil. And this is making it clear that evil is something that, or any kind of harm doing, is something that doesn't just exist in the world. It doesn't have any of its own existence, but it's something that we create within the human world with our mind, with our actions, our words. And so to not create evil is to do everything we can to be aware of and practice those impulses that lead us to create harm and to weaken them, to diminish them, to let them drop away. To not create evil. This is the very abiding place of all Buddhas. This is the very source of all Buddhas. Do not create evil. Will you maintain this?
I vow to not create evil.
Okay. One bow. And evil in this sense encompasses everything, anything in the spectrum of what is harmful or destructive. The second pure precept is to practice good. In a similar way, this makes it clear that good, the virtues, the precepts, don't just exist in the world. We bring them forth, right? So that means we are making a commitment to bringing forth what is good. It's a way of being in the world, rather than just being consumed with what needs to be done, which is important, or where we're going, which is important, but that every step along the way, in a sense, we're cultivating a sense of how can I do this? How can I travel to this place? How can I engage in this activity in a way that is bringing forth benefit? It's like a magnanimous heart. This is the dharma of Samyak Sambodhi, unexcelled perfect enlightenment. This is the way of all beings, the basic nature of all beings. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
As an old master said, so simple that a child can understand it, so challenging that even after many years, we still have to apply effort. The third pure precept is to actualize good for others. To practice good is just all-inclusive. At every moment, in every situation, in every encounter, it's complete. Actualize good for others is specifically about bringing that benefit to others, to human beings, all living things. And so this is to really bring forth the bodhisattva vow in direct relationship to people, because we need this, right? So this is to transcend the profane and to be beyond the holy, Dogen says. This is to liberate oneself and others. That when we make our lives in service to others, we are liberating ourselves and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this? Now, the grave precepts that follow are more specific, right? Because the pure precepts are very powerful, but they're so broad. So what are the things that we as human beings, as we are setting out on this path, what do we need to pay particular attention to? What are the ways that human beings throughout time, in all places, all cultures, have created the most trouble for ourselves and others, created the most binding karma, cause the most pain and suffering? What are the specific ways that we conduct ourselves that's the result? So these grave precepts bring our attention to these basic impulses that we have that are universal, and then to practice those when they arise and to try and work towards them not arising. But when they arise, because these are training precepts, then we develop skillfulness in how to meet those impulses so that we don't just indulge them. We don't just, you know, recreate those patterns that just perpetuate more bondage. And at the same time, we're not just trying to free ourselves of those binding impulses, but at the same time, creating bringing forth positive impulses. So you'll see that reflected in each of these grave precepts. So the first of the great precepts is to affirm life, do not kill. All things that have life are alive. They have life. And to love life, Buddhism believes, is our natural inclination. We don't practice just to alleviate suffering. We practice to have joyful, happy, joyful, contented, purposeful lives. Every creature exists within its own intricate web of causation. It has its own purpose and role to play, animate and inanimate objects. It arises within this intricate web of mutual dependency. So the basic nature of all things, in and of themselves, is non-harming. All things are in a natural state of peace, in and of themselves. We practice because, given that, we still bring forth greed, anger, delusion, violence, hatred. But this precept is recognizing that because all things exist in their own dharma state, all things have their own dignity, are to be respected, in a sense, are to be allowed to fulfill their purpose. When we kill, we take away that opportunity. And so when we kill, as we must, to eat, to kill bacteria and germs that would threaten lives, we do so knowingly, we do so with compassion, we do it with the purpose of giving something back. to transform a personal and social culture of taking into one of giving. And this is also a precept of not harboring the mind that would kill, take the life away from everything. Of course, it refers to not taking human life and all life, but to kill the life of anything. Dogen says, life is non-killing. The seed of Buddha grows continuously. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha and do not kill life. Will you vow to affirm life? Do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
Each of these precepts can be understood in their traditional way, in this case, not taking human life, and also more expansively. The second great precept is to be giving, to not steal. We have a strong penchant for attaching, grasping at things. And we can manifest that in a lot of different ways. And so Buddhism realizes that the path, a spiritual path, is based in giving. It's based in relinquishment and non-attachment. And so we are practicing to not continue to accumulate, but rather to free ourselves. Without giving, if we don't practice giving, then we create a world in which we stand in isolation. We cut ourselves off. We create a kind of self-created separateness from all things. We begin to die. Something essential begins to die. In giving, we have to come into contact. We have to recognize there is someone before me. There's something that I can offer. And which means we have to work with the impulse to take what does not belong to me, to develop a non-grasping mind, and to not seek contentment in things that we want that are going to have the delusion they're going to give us something, in power, titles, positions. In other words, to cultivate a mind of generosity, a mind of non-attachment. Dogen says, the mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Will you vow to be giving, to not steal?
I vow to be giving, I will not steal.
The third great precept is to honor the body, do not misuse sexuality. So this precept deals with our sexual energies, right, which is present in every living thing. And it recognizes that sexual energy is just a form of desire, a form of an energy that moves within us. And it is a very powerful force when it arises. It can destroy love. It can destroy trust. It can create divisions. It can also generate love. It can cultivate and strengthen trust. It can bring us together rather than create divisions. It can create deep wounds. It can heal deep wounds. And so this precept is about not misusing that sexual impulse, that energy that we have, and to use it only to give, to be service, to be of service, to help others, to help the one that we are being sexual with. But it's also recognizing that sexual energy just doesn't manifest when we're in a sexual act, but just through sexual desire, through the way we speak with each other, the way we look at each other, the way we regard each other. So this precept is about not objectifying, that other people are not there for that purpose for us, to respect. And so we work with those energies, right? We practice not suppressing, not denying, not trying to avoid, but to work with them. And to regard, to honor the body is to honor the whole of the person, the physical, the mental, the emotional, the historical, all aspects, not to reduce anybody to one aspect. A person is not an idea. They are not our projection. Dogen says the three worlds, wheels of body, mouth, and mind, greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Will you vow to honor the body? Do not misuse sexuality.
I vow to honor the body, and I will not misuse sexuality.
The The next precept is to manifest truth, do not lie. So really the whole basis of our practice is to live within the true nature of things. Not some absolute truth that exists as something somewhere, but as a living, dynamic reality that is based in emptiness. Nothing fixed, nothing permanent. And yet that very nature of all things, emptiness, comes forth in the 10,000 forms of things. And so to be truthful within our practice, within others, and as we've discussed, each of these precepts is to be practiced directly as it's expressed. And at the same time, when to be truthful in a certain moment would actually cause harm that is not helpful, right? Then we understand this precept within that context. And so it doesn't mean to say everything to everyone that you think is true, right? It means to be truthful within and without, based in compassion, which means we have to be very clear about our own mind, about our intention. So rather than turn away from what is real, to seek what is real and true. To live without deception is to live without regret. It's to live lightly and simply with a straightforward mind and heart. The Buddha said, we may be afraid of the truth in various moments as we face it. And so to manifest truth and not lie is also to have courage. Dogen said, the Dharma wheel unceasingly turns and there's neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Will you vow to manifest truth and do not lie?
I vow to manifest truth and do not lie.
The next precept is to proceed clearly, do not cloud the mind. And this refers traditionally to, and still, to intoxicants, any way that we would introduce something into our system that clouds the mind. Because it's the practice is to cultivate and discover and appreciate how bright and clear our natural mind is. That is ever present, it is the mind of suchness. It is miraculous in its awareness, Bodhidharma said. When this is hidden, when that clarity is hidden, then things appear dull and dimmed. And then we can be inclined to find ways to feel alive. We can also use this clouding of the mind as a way to avoid and escape and deny things. But they don't go anywhere. They're right there when we become sober of mind and body. When we encounter the real self, really, more and more we seek less and less to escape what is difficult, because we know that doesn't help. When we encounter the bright, clear mind, we no longer have an appetite to cloud the mind, to become foggy and dull. Everywhere you go, you find yourself. At various moments, that can seem like bad news. But it is the good news. Dogen says, the mind is the originally pure mind and clear Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly and do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I vow to proceed clearly and will not cloud the mind.
And this precept within the middle path is guiding us that when we are with friends, having a drink, enjoying ourselves, enjoying each other, that we are aware. We are aware of what we're doing, of what our intention is, that to allow that to bring us closer, right? And when is it not that? When is something else happening? The next precept is to see the perfection. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. What we recognize as faults and mistakes within ourselves and others can be an opportunity for discovery, for examination, for shift, for realization. These faults arise from our past actions. They're encouraged by our present conditions. They make sense, as Bodhidharma said, when we understand them, and we are accountable But when we see them in others, we shouldn't be surprised if we see something in another that we think we have no seed of, no presence of, we should look again. And so seeing the perfection is realizing that we are not our actions. There is no self, inherent, intrinsic, and yet we act and are responsible. This precept also says that when we need to speak of another's errors and faults, which we have to do, we do so only to help, only to be of benefit. We don't gain any pleasure or enjoyment from that. We're not trying to hurt anybody or cause harm. There are short Buddhas and tall Buddhas, fast Buddhas and slow Buddhas. There's a practice of learning how to fall. There's a practice of learning how to stand. Where's the distinction? The distinction is always in the mind. Is it in accord with the precepts? Is it helping? Is it liberating? Will you vow to see the perfection? Do not speak of others' errors and faults.
I vow to see the perfection and do not speak of others' errors and faults.
Master Dogen said, in the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. We have one essence, one nature. The second precept is similar and different. Realize self and other as one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. The Buddha spoke about speech that is harsh, hurtful. He also spoke about speech that is divisive, that separates. We are living in a time of the abundance of both of those forms of speech and the destructive nature of them. And so this precept is bringing our attention to that impulse that we have and that we see in others. A sense of self is a self-creation of a self-clinging mind. Society, institutions create levels, positions of power, of authority. We have them here. In Buddhism, they should only be brought into existence to serve, to bring about some positive benefit, to have a good function, which means those in those positions need also to learn how to hold those positions and not to be deluded into thinking that having a position of authority, receiving the precepts, for instance, makes you in any way different from any other person. When there is no self-clinging, we're no longer carried away by praise or blame. We realize each person is complete, fulfilling their own virtue, even though we don't always act out of that. Dogen said, Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there's no inside or outside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's no square inch upon which to stand. Will you vow to realize self and others one? Do not elevate the self and blame others.
I vow to realize the self and others as one, and will not elevate the self and blame others.
The next precept is to give generously, do not be withholding. So there's the precept on not stealing, taking what doesn't belong to us. This precept is about having something that would help and not wanting to share it, not wanting to give it. In terms of sharing the Dharma, in terms of sharing a meal, in terms of sharing time or attention or a word or a gift. We always have something to offer, always. To be withholding creates a cycle of confinement and anxiety of never enough. To give generously frees us from the story of never enough. We see that it's better to live simply and deeply than to be burdened with what we treasure too much. And then we can enjoy what we have without the fear of loss, because we're no longer fooled into thinking that it can bring us ultimate peace, fulfillment, contentment. When we hold on, we've already lost what we're clinging to. To let go is to move in accord with things. Master Dogen says one phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors. This is what we can give. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Will you give generously to not be withholding?
I will give to give generously and to not withhold.
The ninth precept is to actualize harmony, not be angry. Anger is a powerful force. It's present in every human being, the capacity for it. It can only arise within us, the Buddha said, because we have the seeds of anger within us. We experience anger in others. It has many forms: irritation, impatience, aggression, anger, hatred. It is not something that anyone can give to us or cause us to have. It can only arise within our own mind, so it is, we do need to take responsibility for it. It can burn down the house. It can take over a person's life. Sometimes it is used compassionately without self-clinging. It can change things. It can get somebody's attention. It can move somebody into a more compassionate way of being. But to live within anger is like a slow-burning illness. And so Buddhism is very earnest in its encouragement that we really take responsibility for our anger and in the anger in the world, and do all that we can to not suppress it, because we see what happens then. It just builds up and blows up and becomes much worse. But to learn how to wield that powerful force and to transform it. Dogen says, it is not regressing, it is not advancing, it is not real, it is not unreal. It is present, but it is not what we think it is. There is an illuminated cloud ocean. There is an ornamented cloud ocean. Will you vow to actualize harmony, to not be angry?
I vow to actualize harmony, not be angry.
And the last of the greatest precepts is to experience the intimacy of things. Do not defile the three treasures. The Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, as I spoke at the beginning, is the heart and mind of Buddha, Dharma. It's also your heart and mind. They are what bring, the three treasures are what brings the precepts into the house of the Buddha, into the Eightfold Path, into the mind of Nirvana. When we turn against the three treasures, which is almost always in a moment of discouragement, frustration, impatience, and we look for a cause, a target. It's the teacher, it's the teachings, it's the community. Or we turn it against ourselves. When our practice wavers, when our practice is steady, at all times, we should be taking refuge. When we see a distance occurring within our practice, look for the distance between you and the three treasures. That's why it's such an important practice. See these three jewels as the jewels of life of every person, yourself. Dogen said, living the Dharma with the whole body and mind is the heart of wisdom and compassion. All virtues return to the ocean of reality. You should not comment on them. This is not a philosophical matter. Practice them, realize them, actualize them. Will you vow to experience intimacy of things? Do not defile the three treasures.
I vow to experience the intimacy of things, and I will not defile the three treasures.
These 16 bodhisattva precepts, the three treasures, the three pure precepts, and the 10 great precepts, are handed down from Shakyamuni Buddha all through these many generations to my teacher, to myself, and now I give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I vow to maintain them all.
Will you maintain them well?
I vow to maintain them well.
Will you really maintain them well?
I vow to really maintain them well.
Okay. Three vows. I realize that I don't know if it's coming across that way, but I'm feeling a little solemn this morning. I think because of this giving of the precepts, really sort of immersing our minds in these teachings at this moment in our time, and the importance of this, the call for this. And these precepts are a joyful endeavor, right? So this has a solemnity to it, because whenever you take vows, that's a big deal, right? I mean, look, we're all witnessing this. And you just said, I will, right? So that's has a gravity to it. That's its point, right? And at the same time, it is a celebration. It is joyful because you are doing this. Whenever somebody steps forward and says, I will work for the benefit of others, there should be a great and quiet round of applause. But don't do it expecting applause. Remember Atisha's phrases. Don't expect applause. Jill. The robe of the Buddha. This is the Kichimyaku, the lineage chart of the ancestors. Whenever we're receiving something, okay, we receive it in Gassho. The mountains and rivers order. This is to certify that Jill Hamer, having fulfilled the precepts, training requirements of Zen Mountain Monastery and the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 10th day of November, 2024, received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the Raksu, the lineage chart, and has been given the Dharma name Kisho. So these students have been all week, in addition to meetings with myself, been sewing these Raksus, which is their robe of liberation. So it's you have to come forward, and I give this to you. And Gassho, it is both a physical manifestation of their vows, so it is a constant reminder, an expression of that. It is also an indication to everyone, anyone who sees it, that this person has taken vows. So in that way, it's a way of just letting that be known. So it's a way of both cultivating our sense of vow and commitment and responsibility and accountability. And also because you have stitched the three treasures into this, each of you, you have a very intimate relationship with it. And this is the beginning of a relationship with this sacred object, which is also just cloth, so it is not an object of attachment, but it does have a power in your mind. That's its function. And it is just cloth. Both are true. Bliss of the ancestors. And along with the list of the ancestors, that includes both our lineage ancestry as also the women's ancestors, those names we chanted this morning. Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Jonathan Coronia, having fulfilled the training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on this 10th day of November received the precepts of the Bodhisattva Way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Dokan. The Buddha's robe. Kichimyaku. Mountains and Rivers Order. This is to certify that Graham Dakin, having fulfilled the training requirements of this order, has on this 10th day of November, 2024, received the Bodhisattva precepts, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Akon. Balance in reverse order. This is to certify that Maureen Kameza, having fulfilled the training requirements of this order, has on this 10th day of November received the Bodhisattva precepts of the way, the lineage chart, the Raksu, and has been given the Dharma name Eshun. And now you do three bows. Everyone in Shoki, everyone please Kasho. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the Sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly they are the children of the Buddha. Now, these four students will pass through the Zendo during Jihai, and this is they will pass you in bow, at bowing to you as they pass. And if you would just return their bow as a way of acknowledging altogether that these students have received the precepts, and it's a gesture of congratulation, but also that we're in this together. And so we take these precepts and practice them and fulfill them together. Okay, so why don't you take a seat? Let me just say a few brief words about your names. So in many religious traditions, a name is given. And so too in our tradition. And so these names are drawn from Chinese characters. Chan Zen came into being as a distinct school within China. We pronounce them with a more, as it would be pronounced within Japanese pronunciation, so we're honoring both of those aspects of our lineage. And the meaning, so each character has meaning, and the meaning, as I spoke about earlier, is different from English. English often sort of nails down and makes very definitive. It's meaning these characters can have more sort of expansive. So Kisho, Ki means that which is radiant, luminous, that shines brightly. It points to the mind, your mind, Buddha mind, that is bright and clear, the mind that illuminates all that it directs itself towards, that clarifies what is confused, that calms what is anxious. It is ever present. It is the bright light of day on the darkest of nights. It is like the sun's radiance. It reaches in all directions. It is like the moon. It is always full and complete, even when it seems to be hidden by clouds. Star, a show, is star. The Buddha was enlightened upon seeing the morning star. He had seen it all his life, but on that morning, when his eyes met that image, he was enlightened to self-nature. It awakened his mind. The darker the night, the brighter the stars shine. This star sits within the spacious sky. It is solitary, and yet it is also in the midst of all the stars. It is inspiring to all who see it. Kisho is a natural radiance that lies within you. Within each of us, it can sometimes seem distant or hidden. We can have our doubts. But Dogen said, never think that you are not capable of awakening your Buddha mind, your Buddha nature. Kisho, radiant, luminous star. Jonathan, Dokan, Do is the path, the way, the great way that is not difficult, when we just free ourselves of clinging and aversion. It is the Do in the temple name of this monastery, Do Shinji. It is the path that you practice. It is also that which you practice to be awakened to. Kan means simple, direct, concise, uncomplicated, unadorned. We tend to value things that are complicated, believing that if they're complicated, then they must have a lot of depth and breadth and value. And we can be suspicious, distrustful of simplicity, which is not simplistic, but it is just unadorned, uncomplicated. It's interesting that one of the original meanings of this word was a medicine made from one source. A medicine made from one source. What is that source? Buddha was referred to as a great physician offering the medicine to heal ourselves, the Dharma. That one source is you, yourself, your Buddha nature. Dokkan is to not complicate, do not ornament, trust that when you leave the way to the way, when you leave mind to mind, then it is spontaneously revealed. Dokkan, the way of simplicity, the direct path. Graham, your name, Aekon. A means eternal, unconditioned, unborn, undying. It's the same first character in A, Dogen's name, A, as well as in Aheji, the monastery that he founded. This A is the true nature, reality of all things, of each person, of you, yourself. It cannot be possessed. It cannot be lost. It is not close. It is not far. Kan is to see directly, to realize. It is the first character in Kanon Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of great compassion, doing deep prajna paramita, saw the emptiness of all the five conditions. A. Saw the nature of A. Aekon is your original face, which is realized when the self is forgotten. It is the Kwan Mu. It is when you die to the self, you can never die again. Aekon is to realize this eternal. Maureen, your name Aishun is the same A as Aekon's. It is eternal, endless, undying, deathless, indestructible, imperishable, infinite, boundless, timeless. So many ways to try and describe the inexpressible. It is the absolute reality from which all things arise and from which all things are inseparable. Different faiths speak of an absolute reality, and they see that in different ways. Buddhism sees it, which is kind of interesting, right? It's as though there's a sense within us that there is something. We may want to touch it, but we can't. We may want to name it, and we give it names, but that's not the thing itself. And yet, the sense of being apart from it is a pain that sits deep within us. And so many traditions have a sense of returning to that eternal. Shun is spring, the time of life, of coming to life from the depths of winter when it seems that everything has gone cold. The landscape is barren. It seems, how could it come back again? But every year, the wisdom of the earth brings us spring. Spring in Buddhism is the great enlightenment itself. It is Buddha mind. Eternal spring is the reason why we can raise bodhicitta and seek the Dharma. It is a reality that resides within each of us. The bodhisattva, discovering this within herself, can then see it in everyone. Aishun, eternal spring. with this taking of vows, you have entered into the great implication of this action, which is the result of all of your many efforts that began long before you entered the path, but reaches a certain kind of culmination here, which is also just a beginning. It is a continuation, and it is something new. It is not a rule, these precepts, and yet this no rule is neither rigid nor relativistic. It arises from the great Dharma body, your own self-nature. These precepts have been given to you today, as they have, which is how they have come down to us, person to person, sitting in presence of each other, just like this. Think about that, going back to the time of the Buddha. And in the presence of the Sangha, you have made vows. So now you are a living link in this great wisdom tradition. Dadarushi referred to it as an archive of sanity, and we need sanity today. And so these precepts, the way to practice them is to be your, just be a practitioner. This is not a performance. This is nothing performative about it. It is to be true. And so with these vows, your practice, your life have changed in ways that you have to keep living and practicing to discover. You can't know yet the ways in which the implications and the ways in which this has changed your life. May they illuminate your life. May you practice long and well to discover all that they are, all that you have done today. And may all the benefit of that be given to everyone. May your life go well.
Thanks so much for listening. To find out more about our ongoing programs and residency opportunities, visit zmm.org.